Welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm Dr. Vicki Van Cleve, and I'm going to be your host today, sitting in for Gail Moskowitz, who is on vacation. On today's show, we're going to talk about how do you know if a loved one needs help making decisions, and how it pertains to those that we take care of, such as our parents, or a family member who might be returning home from a combat situation, or any other beloved family members. As you know, Mental Health Matters is a program dedicated to issues pertaining to mental health, interpersonal relations, addictions, sex and sexuality, and discussing healthy ways in which to live a more thoughtful and emotionally honest and fulfilling life. Each week, we highlight an issue and discuss it with you, and may or may not have an opportunity to ask questions and weigh in on the subject. MHN has historically come to you every Monday at 1 p.m. on WRIR 97.3 FM. However, we'd like to announce that Mental Health Matters is moving as of next week, the first week in September, to Thursdays at the same time, 1 p.m. So don't look for Mental Health Matters next Monday, but instead Thursday, September 2nd, 2010 at 1 o'clock. For today, as always, you can listen to the program in real time by logging on to WRIR's website at www.wrir.org. The show will be available to you this evening, along with all of the past shows, by logging on to the WRIR website and clicking on to MHM, Mental Health Matters, and Gail's website will appear. Her website is mentalhealthmatters.web.officelive.com. Gail is also happy to send you a link to her site if you email her at urmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. Feel free to send us your comments, questions, or suggestions for a future show. Today, I'm going to be talking to Dr. Lindsay Slaughter, who is a clinical psychologist at Piedmont Geriatric Hospital in Burkeville, Virginia. She works with people 65 and older who have dementia and or severe mental illness. She's interested in healthy and successful aging, as well as evaluating individuals about their ability to continue to make decisions and function in healthy ways in their life. I'm excited to bring you today's topic. Dr. Lindsay is going to be discussing the indicators that family members might be having trouble functioning, and then what to do about it. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the show, Dr. Slaughter.
Well, thank you, Dr. Van Cleve. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Mm-hmm. I was fascinated by this topic because it's so relevant in today's world when we have lots of soldiers coming home from combat situations mm-hmm. and having difficulty either adjusting back into their lives. And we also have record numbers of people moving past the age of retirement mm-hmm. and needing assistance, like maybe having trouble managing their finances mm-hmm. or having trouble driving. Mm-hmm. And so your topic was interesting because it's difficult to make those kinds of decisions and how to tell. And so I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about what are the indicators that someone might be having difficulty.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, first thing is oftentimes folks might think of decision-making as a sort of either-or situation. So either my loved one can make a certain decision, whether that's to get behind the wheel and drive in older age, or they cannot. And the one wonderful thing about viewing it in terms of capacity is that it's on a continuum. So I just wanted to preface kind of by saying that this isn't an either-or situation. Oftentimes we just want to target exactly where they can make decisions and at what level.
So are you saying that it's not, say, that someone can't drive, mm-hmm. that we just get rid of their license, or they can drive all the time, but maybe there is some kind of range in the middle?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that goes for especially the more complex decision-making things like financial management you mentioned, as well as can my loved one live independently without a caregiver present, or certain more complicated decisions such as that. So we really want to take a look at where along that continuum do they need assistance, and we really kind of want to make sure that they're as independent as possible and as safe as possible. So you asked the question, Dr. Van Cleve, about how can I tell? You know, how can I tell if my mom in her 80s, or perhaps, like you mentioned, a loved one returning with a traumatic brain injury or something of the sort, folks with sometimes with severe or profound mental retardation, et cetera, how can I tell? And usually we want to look at behavioral signs, those things regarding daily functioning. So, you know, can my loved one appropriately bathe and groom themselves on a daily basis? Can my loved one be able to track their finances in a goal-directed and responsible fashion? So usually what we see are some warning signs or developing signs of impaired capacity. Such as maybe short-term memory loss, forgetting things, as is a lot of the time in the case of like an Alzheimer's or a dementia situation. But we can also see this, as you mentioned, with severe mental illness, folks who might be experiencing some very severe, what we call psychotic symptoms, who are having trouble making some judgment calls. So we really tend to see some warning signs pretty early at times, and other times it's kind of more sneaky.
So what would be something we might pay attention to at first, or what are some of the things that families say that they first saw with their loved ones mm-hmm. that said, oh, something's not right?
Something's not right. Well, as we know, the percentage of folks with an Alzheimer's diagnosis is increasing rapidly. So I can use that as a pretty pertinent example. And what we find there are some warning signs of short-term memory loss, oftentimes quite gradual, may not be recognizable right overnight.
Would that be something like, I forgot my keys and I can't find my keys? Is it that subtle?
It can be, absolutely. It can be that subtle, but it usually progresses then into getting lost in familiar places, having difficulty tracking, a route that used to be quite ordinary or familiar to the individual. And so we start to see some of these warning signs, and we think, okay, you know, should mom be behind the wheel at this juncture? Or we start to see that maybe the money isn't managed, the checks aren't being cut on a regular basis to pay the bills and make sure, you know, things are going smoothly. So, some of those things are signs that maybe our loved one needs a little bit of help.
Well, okay, so if we see that they have some of these symptoms, like mm-hmm. maybe they're not paying their bills, or we get wind of that, or just they're not handling things in the way that we might normally expect them to do, well, how do we talk to them about that? Mm. I think it's really tough as a child mm-hmm. to have to talk to your parent about that. That's kind of unnatural. Or even to talk to a spouse who's come home from a successful military stay away. Mm-hmm. How do we have those kinds of conversations without either stepping out of our roles or insulting them?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a great point. And this is where, you know, empathy really comes into play here, which is the first thing you might want to think about is, how would you feel if another member of your family or a close friend were to say, hey, you know, Dr. Van Cleve, we're really concerned about you. We're worried about you. How would you want to be approached by a loved one? And particularly in our westernized culture, independence is so valued, you know, that being autonomous and self-directed, this is a really strong value. And so we really want to keep in mind how we'd want to be treated if someone were to approach us with the issue of maybe we're not making the best decisions for ourselves. So that's first and foremost. Also, before the issue even surfaces of potential impaired capacity, I would suggest talking about decision-making before it even happens. So, and this goes for even myself as a younger adult. You know, my husband and I need to talk about these issues. If, God forbid, something should happen, a car accident, et cetera, that we're discussing these issues, what we would like in terms of decision-making with medical things and such as that. So it's never, never too early to get started to talk about that.
So even in military families, mm-hmm. before deployment, deployments happen, it might be something to talk about. What happens if, and how do we want to manage this?
Absolutely.
And who are we going to use as resources? And
absolutely. I think that's great advice as well. Certainly in that situation, as well as with someone with dementia or potential dementia. So yes, absolutely. Another word of advice is careful of trying not to overprotect your loved one. Sometimes we have a knee-jerk reaction if, you know, mom gets lost while driving. Oh my gosh, you know, what are we going to do? We all need to gather the resources, have a family meeting. But really kind of take a step back and see the situation of what things they can still do safely.
So you're saying we don't necessarily need to get in the car and that we have to be their chauffeur from here on out. Is that what you're saying?
Sure. We don't want, and that might be the case that it might get to that point. However, we want to try to take a step back and see the overall picture and get an idea of what they can still do for themselves. Because one thing we don't want to do is do so much for our loved one then that they become almost sort of dependent on us in that regard. And also taking the lead for a loved one in that way can also leave them feeling kind of helpless. Mm-hmm. Helpless can lead to some low self-esteem, anger. If you have a loved one approach and say, look, we need to take your keys, there's going to be some, you know, defensiveness and anger oftentimes from your loved one when a family member steps in. But a lot of that can be prevented simply in your approach, like I was saying, empathic and being able to survey the situation.
Well, what do you do in a situation where your loved one you may approach them and approach them openly and the loved one says, I appreciate your care and concern, but I'm fine.
And those are the toughest situations where the awareness, what we call the awareness of the impairment, is very low. And that's when you look to your resources. You mentioned resources earlier. And I think the Alzheimer's Association has a lot of wonderful go-to resources on their website. So I would suggest anyone looking up some resources there. But certainly, one thing you can do is gather your resources in your family. Who in the family has a rapport or a relationship with this individual to really kind of make a difference in being heard? You know, mom, we love you a lot, but we recognize that there's an issue and you might need some more help. If that doesn't work, then you can go ahead and get an assessment. And that's something, like you mentioned, that I do in my work as a psychologist, is what we call capacity assessments. We see what area is potentially impaired, whether that's financial decision-making, medical decision-making, and we have a professional, usually a healthcare professional, step in and do an assessment.
How does one go about finding someone to do that assessment or... And what are the resources that are required in order to pay for such an assessment?
You can utilize a lot of resources in the community here in the greater Richmond area. I would advise you to take a look at maybe Chapman Senior Care. They have a lot of resources in their website regarding these evaluations, as well as some other private practitioners in the area who may have geropsychology expertise or expertise in other areas regarding decision-making evaluations. And Jewish Family Services also, they tend to help out a lot in terms of guardianship issues that might come about. Options for assessment in those ways. So certainly the Richmond area does have an opportunity for folks to get the help that they need.
Oh, that's great news to hear. We will be putting those resources on the WRIR website under Mental Health Matters following the show. Mm-hmm. Dr. Slaughter, what about financial resources? What's necessary in order to pay for these evaluations? Does insurance cover them? Mm-hmm. Or what do families need to be aware of about that part?
Mm-hmm. About coverage, that's a great question. And I don't want to speak for all practitioners. However, insurance can cover certain assessments and evaluations. And I would think that given certain circumstances that that would be an option. So since I'm not, I have to say I'm not in private practice, so I myself don't know too much about navigating the insurance byways and highways, but I'm sure that there are some options available for family members who may have limited resources.
So they should probably call their insurance providers and have a conversation with them.
That's a great idea, as well as, of course, the licensed provider, whoever is performing the evaluation.
Now, the other question that pops into my head as you're talking is if you're trying to get your family member to have help and you want them to go be seen, we have certain laws of confidentiality and protection. And how does the family member get the information from the provider in order to help provide the proper care for your for your loved one?
That is a very tricky situation at times regarding those ethical issues, really is what you're referring to. And it does require some consent on the end of the loved one. So if there's a release of information that needs to be signed or confidentiality statements, the loved one needs to be the most active participant in the treatment in that regard. Now, given that, there are what we call surrogate decision makers who can step in as a representative, either an authorized representative to assist in treatment decisions and things like that. And so there are some options once capacity becomes more impaired over time. And really, the restrictions become more and more restrictive over time as the impairment increases typically. But we want to start off as the least restrictive. So really that your loved one really should be the center of treatment.
Well, that's wonderful. And I'm thinking about, you know, when you have your loved one who, if you're talking about it early in your relationship or early in life, it makes it easier because you have all those things for prevention. If, say, family members or our listeners here haven't had those conversations yet and they do notice that their family member is having some difficulty and they've tried to talk with the family member, what I'm wondering is, does it help to collect information from lots of sources, like maybe, I don't know, like a say, like on January, you had trouble finding your keys, and on February, you got lost. And does it help to kind of show a timeline, or does, if someone's having trouble functioning, do they even recognize that that's?
Oftentimes, unfortunately, they do not. They may not. That lack of awareness that I was referring to. And so really, the eyes and ears become the family members. Being able, like you said, yes, absolutely, to kind of track functioning over time, see how the self-care is going over time, if there's been any what we call decompensation, or you know, mom's not showering as much as she used to, or you know, my sister has gone on all these spending sprees, but she's still not paying her bills, you know, in the midst of, say, a bipolar episode or something of the sort. So really, it's oftentimes the family members are the eyes and ears. So yes, you're right in that, Dr. Van Cleef. Absolutely.
Boy, it just sounds kind of exhausting and very stressful for the family members. What do you recommend for family members when they're having to watch their loved one not function as well as they did in earlier times?
It is incredibly stressful, or it can be. And so luckily, there are support groups out there. I would encourage anyone to take a look at some websites such as the Alzheimer's Association. SeniorNavigator.com is another really good one, and Senior Connections. And they have some go-to resources on how to, you know, how do caregivers care for themselves and each other when it can be such a stressful situation. And certainly a break is always needed in the midst of a pretty intense situation, such as helping a loved one make decisions.
You know, you've mentioned the Alzheimer's group as a place for resources. Just saying the word Alzheimer's scares me and thinking, whoa, you know, that's a pretty big deal. I don't even want to go to that website. Mm. Do people have to have, like, is it just for Alzheimer's, or can, do those resources apply to everybody?
Those resources can really apply, at least the ones that I was perusing, can apply to anybody that might be having some difficulties making decisions or having some kind of what we call cognitive or thought impairment, or short or long-term memory loss issues and things like that. And so there are some pretty good, for lack of a better word, generic interventions that, you know, folks can peruse on that website to be very helpful.
Are there checklists or guides about what kinds of things to watch for?
They do. They have a section on warning signs, just like I had discussed earlier, as well as what to do in a sort of systematic fashion, as well as assessment, some things to look for and where to go with that as well.
Oh, that's great to hear. So again, I will have all those resources mm-hmm. on WRIR.org mm-hmm. under Mental Health Matters. In your experience, Dr. Slaughter, and what family members have told you, what has been the most challenging part for them, or that maybe the listener can relate to in terms mm-hmm. of what they struggle with every day?
Mm-hmm. Well, and sometimes it depends, again, on the diagnosis or the situation, but certainly with something like an Alzheimer's-type dementia, oftentimes the struggle is, you know, my loved one doesn't know me and I don't know them anymore. Mm-hmm. So there's an almost loss of relationship that some of my patients and their families have actually likened to that of almost like a dying process. You know, that not just a loss of functioning, but a loss of identity and a loss of closeness because their family member is no longer who they used to be. You know, these sorts of disorders can change personality and change behaviors to the point of just really being quite devastating in that way. And so I would say with those with severe mental illness, it's oftentimes a similar experience. However, since the nature of severe mental illness is there's usually a recovery period where the person becomes a little bit more lucid and stable. And so the loss doesn't always appear as great. It's more kind of cyclical, whereas something with a more progressive type dementia like Alzheimer's, it can be very, very difficult, very difficult.
So I would imagine, too, with families where they've had, again, military families mm-hmm. where they've had brain injuries, is there recovery with related to that? Or is that also kind of, again, a loss experience mm-hmm. that you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. And admittedly, I've not worked with a lot of folks coming back from the Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts, so I don't have too much extensive experience. However, folks working, say, at the Veterans Affairs and in psychological departments and such as that, they certainly have experience with that. But I would imagine that, you know, that experience of having a loved one come home in a very different state of mind, whether that's emotional or cognitively, you know, their thought processes can be very, very difficult. And during that recovery period, it's very trying. But there's always hope. And I didn't want to leave it on a devastating note that there's always hope and resilience. The human nature is always pushing towards resilience and hope. So,
yes, that makes sense. And speaking of hope with Alzheimer's patients mm-hmm. or family members, when you have your family member that's lucid for a period of time mm-hmm. and then they kind of forget a lot and then they are lucid again, that's a really difficult time also because there's a lot of hope involved with, are they, you know, maybe they'll get a little bit better. Mm-hmm. What my question is if they happen to be living at home and they're kind of in and out mm-hmm. of awareness, what's kind of the tipping scale for when you need to get help? Like, what's the, mm-hmm. you know, when is it time to pull all the resources together?
Mm-hmm. And again, that's a very tough question because I think one of the most complicated decisions are can you live independently or not? And that includes a bunch of skills. I mean, think of what we do on a daily basis. You know, we both woke up in the morning, we're bathing, we're dressing, we're doing all these things, we're taking care of our money, we're mowing the lawn, we're keeping up with the stove and the of gas and all these kinds of things, making judgment calls every day. So want to make sure that, you know, we're taking a look at the very specific areas of functioning and making sure that we're seeing how the loved one is doing in each of those areas. And from that point on, seeing, you know, what are their judgment calls looking like? If the stove is being left on, is there a danger of harm to self or others? That becomes a pretty big tipping point. As well as, you know, repeated falls oftentimes, or mobility issues that leave the person in some type of harm or danger. That's when we want to step in and be a little bit more assertive.
Do you, oh my goodness, I just forgot what I was going to ask you, Lindsay. Dr. Slaughter, how long have you been working in this field?
I've been working specifically with older adults for the past 4 years. It was 4 years, August 10th, actually. So,
wow, happy anniversary.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, it is certainly a passion of mine.
And what is it that you really love most about working with this client group and helping families deal with these types of issues?
Mm-hmm. I think it really is going back to the resilience and the fact that, you know, family members really do care and they really want to meet their loved one where they are and support them in whatever way they can. And, you know, it's just very refreshing to see that, and that older adulthood is not always ravaged by disease and disability and all these things. There are many successful, successfully aging folks, and I do get to see them at the hospital as well, and a lot of wisdom that they impart, and it's just a very refreshing profession.
So just as a final question to ask you, do you recommend that family members or that someone move into the home to work with family members as opposed to moving them to a long-term care residence, if at all possible?
That's another great question. I think it really depends on the family, and it depends also on the family value. Some folks believe that we want to keep the family member in the home at whatever cost, and that means getting in-home care workers or family members to step in and help with around-the-clock care, and that's fine. That's the family's decision for that. Another person or family might decide that, you know, a more structured living environment like assisted living or a nursing home is more appropriate. So it really is based upon the family.
Great. So basically, overall, you're saying have a lot of empathy, have these conversations early.
Absolutely.
And the earlier the better, no matter what the situation happens to be. Mm-hmm. We've been listening today to Dr. Lindsay Slaughter on WRIR.org, Mental Health Matters. As a reminder, we will be moving to Thursdays starting September 2nd at 1 p.m. If you have any questions, feel free to shoot an email to Gail Moskowitz at urmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. Again, this is Dr. Vicki Van Cleve sitting in for Gail Moskowitz.
In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy, don't worry, be happy now.